Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 39 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. There was quite a lot of stuff going on this week with the LA screenings and stuff. That was pretty prolific. I know that Diana herself had two very lengthy
but posts. Delicious.
Oh, for sure. Posts. I love anything.
And
that
her
she
descriptions
posts
are
that
come
is,
on. When you get such a great writer giving us descriptions of something she's done. This is not something from her imagination, which she's already good at.
No.
This is something that actually happened. She's going to give us the most juicy, delicious, wonderful descriptions.
No, it's true. And I noticed that because I'm so anti her quotes of the day from Moby or whatever they're called.
You're not anti. You just
I don't
want to
read
interested.
Them. I don't want to read
you
them.
You don't want
to spoil. So I tend to scan them, and if I see the word Moby in it at all, I keep going, and I don't want to read it. So I had to, like, really pay attention to her postings this week to see what they were, but there were two, part one and part two, Schmoozing in LA posts that I thought were really interesting.
And we linked to them both. I think we shared both of her posts on our Facebook page, and we really, they're too long and too descriptive and all of that for us to read.
No, you
to
should
read,
really, just go read them for yourself.
Here. Just, and you know, you don't even have to go to our page, that's totally, just go to her page. And they're there, and they're wonderful.
They are. And I'm really excited to hear the music.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yes, that's one thing I will mention. In the second one, I think it was number two, she talks about, yes, she loved the episode. She had seen the episode before, but not, I guess, in its final cut and not with the music.
Not with the actual
music. And she
music.
Said, she didn't talk much about the music throughout except that it was nice. It was very nice, and very everything. But she was very superlative about, speaking of Bear McCreary, but she did talk about the opening sequence, didn't she?
She did.
She said it was, I mean, I don't have her exact words, but she said that the Baudrin, it was such great surround sound that she could feel it in her body. And
why?
Yes.
Oh my God, why can't they screen the first episode in a movie theater in town so that I can go experience that? Get on that. Somebody,
you know,
do
even
that.
If it's late, even if it's like, you know, a week after, just because the fans have already been in existence for 20 plus years, right? The fans, I mean, heck, if we're going to go see, and we will if we get the opportunity, if we would go see something like Emulsion or Heart of Lightness that has Sam in it and Laura Donnelly from Outlander, just because it has characters, or excuse me, actors from the same production, because we're that interested in anything and everything that's related, even tangentially, to Outlander, come on. And those tickets are not that cheap.
No.
We would definitely pay a decent price to go see at least the premiere. It's local. You know, I'm not even talking about glitzy types, no schnazzy, no red carpet, nothing. Just if they had a showing, even if it wasn't on premiere night, at a local theater, holy monkey.
For sure, for sure.
Just to have that experience.
So go check those two posts out. They're very, very good. I enjoyed them. So Diana posted a picture.
It's so cute.
Of herself.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Actually, and Facebook. It was a separate post, but she started on Twitter, I think.
She officially has her copy.
The first printing
of Written in My Own Heart's Blood, and there's a picture of her holding it.
And she's
so
happy.
I would be too.
After giving birth to that baby, ooh.
I'm excited. It's getting closer. We're getting closer.
I'm very excited.
She also posted some pictures of her that kind of goes hand in hand with the upfronts that she was doing when they were all doing the screenings in LA of what she was wearing. And this is very typical Diana Fair, I've noticed. She likes to wear a lot of the blousy, drapey fabrics. She always looks very comfortable. She doesn't look like... She's not the type of person who's going to get all dolled up in something, corseted and sucked in and whatever she...
Except for
you
the
know
show.
I know.
She did have a role.
But you know she's the type where she just looks like she wants to be comfortable. But beautifully done. I think this is... It almost looks like Indian. Like almost like a sari kind of a look to it. Without being a sari.
And I love her, the wrap, whatever that is, the wrap she has over one shoulder. Mm-hmm. The gorgeous blue. You have to check these pictures out, too. Yeah.
She's been taking a lot of selfies this week.
Yes,
this,
she has.
The next picture she posted was another picture of her with the book. And the book looks significantly thicker and larger in this picture than it did in the last one.
Especially held up against her.
Yeah.
Because she's so small.
Right.
Like the size of her entire torso, basically.
Right. No, it's a pretty big-looking book, so I'm equally still excited about that. The Outlander Star's Instagram account posted some pictures this week. Well, just one picture, excuse me. They posted one picture this week. So, Stars, you're slacking. Get back on the horsehair. Literally.
On the horsehair.
There's a picture of one of the horses. It's a very dirty horse. And I'm really interested in the saddle pad they've got going on. Because that's like
lamb's wool or something.
Well, it is. Sheepskin. But if you look at traditional saddle pads, they don't generally go all the way down the horse. Uh-huh. They don't, not generally. Like, I was just horseback riding yesterday with Lene, and the saddle pad literally, I mean, it was an English saddle, so that's a whole different animal altogether, but it was an English saddle, but the saddle pad literally was just a little bit bigger on all sides than the saddle. So this one is huge.
Quite large.
Literally drapes down the side of the horse, but it does look like it's an entire sheepskin. That horse probably is enjoying not having everything rubbing on him, so. Mm-hmm. But it is muddy. I wonder if that's more the mud they brought in or if that was, already there.
Yeah. I wonder where that, we don't know.
Everyone looks filthy. We also got a new Speak Outlander this week from Outlander Stars. This week's phrase, it was a phrase this week, was one of my personal favorites. I'm looking forward to hearing him say it. It is Dinifash. And it features, I know Mrs. Fitz did it feature, I don't remember, did it feature other than Agav? Was there anyone else in that?
I don't remember. I don't believe so. I think it was mostly her.
Mostly her. Well, I mean, I'll go back and look later, but it's fine. We love Mrs. Fitz.
She's
seriously adorable. So this week, it seemed like Access Hollywood has been
delivering
exactly what Ginger's been asking for, which is more Tobias. And
any Tobias.
But it was actually a kind of a longer interview.
For one-on-one, yeah.
He just seems so uncomfortable.
A lot of people said that. I don't think he seems uncomfortable. He seems quite comfortable, at least when he's sitting. But I think he is very keen to do good by the job, by the characters. And he knows that this is a huge fan base already existing and only growing. And he's probably, especially, he makes note, he says he has not yet dived into
the social media.
And I think, obviously, that's his personal choice. I think it's an interesting choice. We've said this before early, like last August or September, we said this before. But I think it actually may also be a good thing. Not just because it keeps him out of stuff and he doesn't have to worry about fan drama.
It adds more
mystique
to him and to the
characters. And because of the characters. Because Frank is one of the most unknown, unappreciated characters of the entire...
True.
Well, of the book, of the entire series. And BJR, obviously, is not loved.
No. Not at all.
And so having neither of them, meaning him, having that actor not be on social media, not accessible to make him more of a person, mm-hmm. Leads to or supports that mystique. I can also see, if I remember correctly, he said something to the effect of obviously not wanting to disappoint, mm-hmm. but joining in the social media, even though you could engage with fans, I think he might feel even, if he did that, he would feel even more of an obligation. Yeah. I can't speak for him, but I could see that. So,
well, that, and honestly, it's just for the best because...
I think so.
I'm sure that all Sam has been hearing, I'm sure, for the last, year is hair. His hair's not right. I don't think he's big enough. I don't think he's whatever. And I'm sure, they just need to do their job. They don't need to... They don't need to be worried about what we're saying. They need to just focus on what they're doing. And if I was ever going to meet him, the only thing... I mean, prior to it starting, between when he was cast and now, the only thing I would say to him is, I'm looking forward to hating your guts. Because that would mean he'd done his job right.
That's exactly right.
So, and it's not a personal anything. It's just...
I can't see myself hating... I just can't. I know this is very interesting that this showed up and we're having this discussion right now. So, like so many things, it's very timely. In our read-along chapter today, it's the biggest and easiest time to hate BJR. I get it. I definitely dislike him. I don't like the character at all. But I just can't hate Tobias in whatever role. I just can't. I mean, not Tobias, but I can't hate a character he plays. I just can't. So we'll see. If he's, and he's great, I know. If he does make me hate Randall, then, you know, I agree with you. Number one, I think he's already going to do a great job, so I'm not worried. But if he actually makes me hate the character rather than just severely dislike him, you know, kudos to him.
Well, he's supposed to. That's his job. Do your job, Toby. Okay.
Toby? I was like,
who's that? Was that a little familiar? Was that
too familiar? A little bit lot, yeah.
Do your job, Tobias.
Thank you.
Anyway. We also got an update, kind of from Recorded Books. It's to stay tuned because they're having an exclusive early preview of the Moby audiobook.
So we're very excited for that because we will also, like many of you, be reading and listening to this. Hopefully as soon as it comes out. We're that excited.
Y'all. I usually want to listen first.
He's a y'all. I don't really care.
I will listen first. I know I will.
I'll have to read first because I'm just quicker.
But that's my problem. Because yes, I will read it quicker, but I'll miss things. So well, I need to listen first. I want to listen first because that is more timely for me. It's more time efficient. I'm going to get more of the story in my head when it happens the first time. And then I'll go back and read it. But I'm still going to hear Davina in my head, which makes me happy. Recorded Books also posted a new picture of Davina
on their Instagram
of her recording Moby, which I still get excited. I'm like, it's just more of the same, but
because before the one they like showed the us was for me. Well, they said that she had started, right? And then they announced when she had finished. But this is an actual picture of her in studio. She may even be posing, who knows? But she's literally, you can see the artwork there on the paper. Mm-hmm. She's literally in the middle of recording, and that's just love so exciting. So this is not really Outlander production related at all.
It's Outlander theme.
This is a fun thing that, you know, we don't bring up everything that's fun or even themed because there's so much. But this is a special like or love of ours. Is Summer and I are both in love with Janet Katsuwan's jewelry, period. When we first heard, and this is last year, when we first heard that she was... had already either started something
She talked to Diana at the New York event and got her permission to do Ellen's Pearls.
And we were excited. And Summer actually introduced me, not personally to her, but to her on Facebook, the page. And I thought, oh my gosh, no way. So we're very excited. And then a few weeks ago, I think we talked about her Luck and Booth
necklace.
And now she has
a bracelet. And so now you can have like a full Luck and Booth set. And it's, I mean, I'm not in a place that I can do that right now, but I would love to have the whole set, honestly.
Oh, they're so pretty. And they're tasteful. Yeah. And the cool thing about this is, if I'm not mistaken, if I read correctly, for the bracelet, I don't know if she'll be making them in the future, but she definitely has left the door open to do so. But you can add your own charms to the bracelet, she says.
Well, yeah, you can.
Yeah,
you
all totally the little can. Hooks. I mean, all the little loops. Charm. So thank you and well done, Janet. You are... so amazingly talented, and we cannot wait to continue to purchase your lovely Outlander-inspired pieces.
Love it. And that about wraps up our announcements this week. And now on to Ginger's favorite part of the podcast during the month of Whiskey Month.
The what?
Month of Whiskey Month.
Scotland's month National of Whiskey Month, you may mean?
Right.
There
anyway,
we go.
Anyway, Ginger's favorite part and my part that I tolerate, and I'm, you know... doing my best. I'm still looking. And I'm in search.
And we are actually a number of people. I don't know if I mentioned it last week or if it was on Facebook or Twitter, but I don't think I mentioned it actually in the podcast. But a number of people have mentioned, for you especially, Drambuie, because it's like a liqueur, a sweet. Mm-hmm. Finally got out, and I got some more whiskeys for us to taste. And as we said, we are looking for minis. And so we purchased a number of minis today, and unfortunately, in the places that I looked, in the two stores that I went to that have minis, Drambuie was not one of them. So that'll be a future purchase, and it can do it at any time during the show. But for the Scotland's National Whiskey Month, we're not able to do Drambuie, but we will one day.
So this week's whiskey is, it's kind of, I've heard of it before.
I've seen it.
It's another blended whiskey called Cutty Sark. And the bottle doesn't really have much on it, so we went ahead and pulled up the website to pull some more information for you. And this is what it says. It says, carefully selected single malt whiskeys, predominantly from Speyside, the cradle of the single malt whiskey distillation, are expertly blended with top quality grain whiskeys to make Cutty Sark. It is matured predominantly in American oak casks, which impart less color to the spirit, but impart further subtle and complex flavors. Once matured, the malts are blended together, as are the grain whiskies. This process is a particular feature of Cutty Sark and ensures the final blend is harmonized and therefore consistent in color and flavor. Thank you, Kirsten Campbell, the master blender. And they're right. This is a very light colored whiskey. Mm-hmm. It says the color should be pale gold.
Oh, sorry.
Tasting notes. The nose should be grassy, fresh, and fragrant. Mm. The palate should be vanilla and oak character from American oak casks. And the finish should be fruity, clean, and dry.
So the nose is what you smell. The color is what you see. The palate is what you taste initially.
In your mouth, and then the finish is
once
what's
it's
left.
Gone. Yeah. And that is, I like this. I've never seen it put out in that order. I like that. Cutty Sark, great website. So yes, I'm glad they gave us those notes on the, okay. the tasting notes. And it says it's 40%.
Yeah.
So that would be that 80 proof?
80 proof.
Okay. And also, remember, I know you just mentioned
it. Says 40% alcohol by volume.
So this is, you mentioned it twice now, one in the description of the palate and also in the description of the whiskey, that here's an example of what our whiskey tasting leader told us in at that Highland Games, that here's an example of the Scots purchasing those American
casks.
American casks, yeah.
All right. Smells like alcohol. I'll give you that.
Oh, this is summer going first.
I don't smell grassy, fresh,
okay.
or fragrant.
Okay, but also don't be dramatic.
I'm not being dramatic.
You're not yet, because you haven't tasted it.
Oh my God. Just let me be. I will taste how
you do
it
your
tastes.
Tasting. Okay.
I don't tell you how to drink.
I understand that, but I'm not the one who freaks out.
I'm not freaking out.
You have.
Shh. I gotta get in character.
There is no character.
This is the character of someone who really wants to like this whiskey. All right. Here we go.
Why do I have to choke every time?
Because it hurts. I will say, this one, so far, is my favorite.
Even more than the Glenlivet?
Yes.
Wow.
You'll see. So far, it's okay. Light. It's much lighter. It's not super heavy. I still don't want to drink it on a regular basis. I want to point that out. But I will say that of the ones we've tried so far, this is my favorite.
So you're liking, well, so far this one, but you're liking a blend so far.
So far. But I don't think it tastes fruity. Or I guess it could be clean because it's not leaving a big cloying taste in my mouth. And it's not super, I don't think it's that dry, but I'm not a whiskey aficionado. But so far,
was it vanilla-y? Could you kind of taste it-ish?
A little, but like I said, the finish, I'm enjoying the finish a lot more than the palate.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, so I'm going to smell it. I'm okay. Yes, it's pale gold. Nose. I get fresh and fragrant. I don't know if I get grassy. I mean, if grass smells like whiskey, it's not any kind of grass I smelled. Maybe, and I mean maybe a hint of vanilla, a hint.
But you see what I said? It's a lot lighter than the other ones we've had. It's not.
I will say the finish. I feel it in my throat, like the burning. Right. Mm-hmm. Last week, when we swallowed it.
Well,
I can't
knives.
Speak for you. And I said, I didn't say knives. I said it made my throat, like, felt like it was hoarse or something. After I swallowed it, it didn't taste bad, but when I swallowed it, it didn't just kind of burn going down. It left my throat feeling like it was rough. Whereas you said knives. This, the finish, it doesn't feel rough. It's definitely strong. Like, I feel it, but it's not, it doesn't feel like the after effect of last week's. I do agree with that. It's not better than the Glenlivet.
I thought it was a lot smoother than the Glenlivet. The Glenlivet, like, burned me from the inside out. I'm just saying.
So far, you're two thumbs up or one?
No, I mean, I'm going to give it, like, I was going to say, like, a nubby thumb. Like, not your whole thumb up, just like
a nubby thumb.
Like, half a thumb.
That's just kind
of
rude.
Like, I still don't want to drink it, but of the ones I've had so far, this is the least unpleasant. So, bravo, Cutty Sark.
Seems like summer is kind of maybe not so offended.
No. And now on to our read-along. This is for chapter 35, entitled Wentworth Prison. This is a long one, you guys.
It's so long, we had to bring some reinforcements.
We did, because, honestly, I think that when you have the long chapters where so much happens, I think we kind of get tired of listening to ourselves.
So we decided to bring back a friend of the show, and I honestly think it's almost at the point that she's an honorary pod member of Lynae.
She's definitely been our most frequent guest.
Agreed.
And, yeah. I mean, heck, she went on the trip with us, so.
Yeah.
Hey. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So welcome back, Lynae.
Thank you much.
And on to Chapter 35, Wentworth Prison.
So we begin with Claire and Myrta arriving at Wentworth Prison, and she meets the governor, Sir Fletcher Gordon, the head of the prison. She is taken into his office, and he's going through his paperwork to find out some information on the prisoner, Jamie, and he finds Jamie's warrant of execution for 2 days hence, December 23rd. When I read it through the first time, I didn't remember this, but I read it through, but then I also went back to take notes. It only hit me then that, wow, that's
almost Christmas.
The solstice.
Yeah.
The 21st.
Mm-hmm. I just have to say, from the very beginning of this chapter, her description of Sir Fletcher was like, I don't know, to me, she's such a great writer, and she paints such vivid pictures of everything, the scenery, the people, and like, her description of him as like this fat little ham with eyes.
Blue eyes, yes.
And like, and you can just visualize him there. It's like, every once in a while, I'm just reminded, little things like that pop into the storyline where you're just like, oh my gosh, she's so amazing, because I just have him in my head. I can totally see him. Anyway, go ahead.
Easter will never look the same.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
But I'd like to say that this chapter starts off rather innocuously.
Yes.
It starts off, you know, it kind of seems like maybe it's not going to be a big deal. It's really kind of tame.
Yeah, he's like, mm-hmm. Oh, so, you're a friend of the family.
Right.
This is so sad.
Exactly. And I don't think the first time through that I had any idea what was in store for me.
Oh, no.
No.
The rest of this chapter.
Dang, no.
It gets intense.
So we find out that for at least a very brief amount of time left, he's still alive. That's the most important thing that they were trying to find out. And he was nearby in the same building with her right at that moment. She asks to see him, but Sir Fletcher says no. She had told him that she was an English friend of the Fraser family to gain entrance, and it was easy enough. Diana calls the prison, quote, a stone rabbit warren. And you can just, with the stuff that goes on later in the chapter and her going around and downstairs and around the corners and all this, you get that picture.
It's just a
very
twisted
much.
Stone maze.
Absolutely.
Of
well, no, but it was very convenient that in her asking that, he offered up the information of exactly where he was being held in the prison.
Yeah.
Which was definitely very helpful.
Yeah.
He does tell her, however, that, to follow along with what Summer just said, he's being kept in a large cell in the West Block with the other condemned felons. And he's been kept in chains since his arrival. That was kind of hard for her, too.
Yeah.
So Claire...
She wants to, like... She holds
oh,
back
yeah,
trying to
exactly.
pound on him. She wants to hurt him.
Exactly. Claire grips her bag to keep from striking him. And that kind of just... That it made me laugh. Because yeah. Here she is trying to be the
She's trying to
calm
keep her emotions
concern.
In check right, exactly. so that she doesn't, like, betray herself. And she's like... Excited to the point where she's like, oh my gosh, he's here, he's alive, yeah. oh my gosh, you know. And then, like, she finds out he's been kept in chains and she wants to just kill this guy. And it's a whole mix of emotions for her.
And then he says that if she were an immediate family member, perhaps leading her to believe that if
maybe
she were,
she would be able to see him.
Mm-hmm. But, and he was kind of looking at her like...
It was like he was trying to catch her in something.
Or I don't know about that, but just trying to say, you know, is there something else you want to tell me? Is your relationship with him what you've told me? Something like that.
Yeah.
But he then goes on to speak to a guard. He brings them both some claret, and the guard returns with a wooden box. We learn that Rupert had borrowed a dress for Claire from a lady in a nearby town, and Claire has, quote, a reasonably good idea just what this particular lady's profession was.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure
from the smell of it, she said.
Yep. Yeah. And she hoped the guard did not recognize the gown.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was, so here we get, obviously, prostitute, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
She's a professional lady.
Exactly. The box had the name Fraser on it, and it had Jamie's personal effects. Because Jamie had refused to say anything about his family, he was willing... Mr. Fletcher was willing to give these items to Claire if she'd take him to his family. And she knew the contents without even looking. So as she takes the box and as she's escorted out,
it's like such a heavy feeling when she gets this box. She's holding this small box.
And he's already been killed.
And it's the contents of this man's life.
Yeah.
And that's all there is in this little box. And she's just like... I mean, I don't know. It feels like this kind of, like, heartbreaking moment of, like, this is it. This is all of his stuff. Yeah. And I don't know. It's very
But
sad.
You see that a lot, like, in, not in, like, just books, but it's, like, you see that with people. It's, like, when a person passes, mm-hmm. it's, like, all of their life is condensed into their what belongings they have left. And, like,
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had a family member go that you've had to go and sort through their house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, go through stuff, and it's just, like, you just sit there and you're like, this is all that's left.
But for him, it's like he really doesn't have any worldly possessions. And for everything that was really important to him that he could keep with him at all times fits into this little box. It was like, wow, you know, to me that just like, it was interesting.
Shiz gets real.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of like, bam, this is a human life.
Yeah.
In this box.
Yeah.
So as she leaves, she has the forethought to try and arrange an opportunity to return for a return visit. She asks that if Jamie wants to write a letter to his family, that she could come pick it up. So as not to give away her location, she asks if her groom, Murta, could return to ask about the letter. And Sir Fletcher says yes. So she's leaving the prison with Murta, and they ride just out of sight, then slides off her horse, and she is sick in the snow. She is, like, probably shaking, and just everything that she has been building up, she had. She couldn't even, like...
Well, she was holding everything so in check and when she was in there, and, like, when as soon as she got out, I'm sure the emotions just took over and just made her sick.
She couldn't even lose it when she left the building. Mm-hmm. She had to, like, ride straight, probably in tall, until they literally got out of sight, because, that's even
almost
worse.
Well, think about how difficult that would be for her.
Yeah.
Because she's...
She's got his stuff that he just touched.
No, she's self-professed, like, the worst liar of everyone in the
land.
That's
true.
Glass face. So for her to be able to hold it and, like, keep that going, and you can see how important that must have been to her.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Murta picks her up bodily and puts her back on the horse, and they go to an inn where Rupert is waiting. So Diana writes, "We were in an upper room from which the bulk of the prison was barely visible in the gathering dusk." Now, I'm not sure if she meant any symbolism here, but there are a few things that I did want to mention. Upper room in the Christian Bible is where the disciples are hiding on the day of Pentecost when the Holy Spirit descends upon them with the gifts of the Spirit. I did a little calculation, and while it's not perfect, it's awfully close. They are at the stones just on or around Claire's birthday, October 29th. They're in the upper room lamenting the loss of Jamie on December 21st. Pentecost is 50 days after the crucifixion, 10 days after ascension. There are 53 days between October 29 and December 21. So there may or may not be any connection, but it's very interesting that this upper room at the end of this 50-day period in the Christian Bible, 50-ish days in the upper room, and they're lamenting possible loss of Jamie.
Diana
so,
is pretty religious.
I know, but this is like...
That's interesting. Isn't I've
that?
Never thought about
Me
that.
Me either, before. Ever.
But I don't doubt that she has a lot of different... hidden things in
Absolutely.
Her, you know, that mean more.
Murta says that they do have a way back in, thanks to Claire's quick thinking about the letter. Rupert asks how much money she has, and she hands over Dougal's purse. Then he and the Coulter twins, and Willie, because we gotta get those names in there, go to another inn where the guards from the prison go to drink and gamble.
Is that the Willie from the picture?
I don't know, but someone somewhere said there were two Willies. This one...
Dirty. There was...
And Willie the brother. I'm thinking it's the flashback Willie.
They... That is so wrong. They posted a picture on Instagram. Was it Instagram? Like,
yes.
Right after that they had that. No.
It was on
Facebook characters that they've cast.
After the dance.
But they had that when they showed the premiere date. They were all holding the premiere date sign.
I didn't
And there was
see
a picture
it.
Of Jamie and the Merry Men.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, they put, that was like, Willie. And I was like, Willie? Who's Willie?
It would be this Willie, then.
It would be this Willie.
It wouldn't
be from the flashback.
Because Willie, his brother?
Yes.
His brother
would
died.
Never would never have been that old.
His brother died young. His brother died quite young.
Well, he died when Jamie was 8.
Right, and his,
I know. And
his brother
was
wasn't
only
that much older
than
him because Jenny was the oldest, was she not?
I don't know.
Anyway, he wouldn't have even been like. I don't know if he lived to be. How old did he live to be? Not even 18. I don't even know if he lived to be an adult.
Yeah, but this guy didn't. I mean, this guy could have been 16. I'm not saying he looked 16.
Yeah.
I'm just saying in the dress. He could have been 16.
Yeah, but
he was not wearing
but the
a
dress. Picture I saw,
in his
dress. But the picture I saw, Jamie was dressed like and looked like
farmer boy,
like from the time Claire is with him.
Yeah, but I'm saying is if it was from a flashback, that's what the character would wear, even if they because it's not a
true,
character.
But
shot,
considering the grouping of people that
was
in that shot,
I'm sure it's
that
this
Willie.
Group. I'm
okay.
sure that's
so.
What
this
it is.
May be it's not a Where's Waldo, it's a Who's Willie.
Stop saying that.
Hey, I did not name him. So the following afternoon,
say, where's Willie?
I almost did, but we don't know where. We just don't know who. So the following afternoon, December 22nd, now that we know the dates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Claire enters the gates of the prison again. They timed it well. Sir Fletcher was eating his midday meal, which, according to the soldiers that they gambled with, the men gambled with,
yeah,
the
they got a bunch
men,
of intel the night
yes,
before.
He did not allow to be disturbed by anyone or anything.
I loved that.
According to the gamblers who had returned before dawn.
Right, but I loved that they said, you know, it takes luck to win, but it takes skill to lose.
Yeah.
And they were obviously going there to lose.
Which
was the whole purpose of why they took
the
purse.
Money.
They took the money to go
yeah.
to that.
So they would have to wait. And after his lunch, apparently Sir Fletcher takes a wee nap. Her groom, Murta, had arrived 15 minutes earlier and had gained entry into the prison without a problem. She expected he'd be waiting in the office. The plan was for him to search the office for a map of the West Wing as well as for keys to the cells. She enters the gates, sees the same guard there as the day before, and says that her groom had forgotten the gift that she had for Sir Fletcher, for his kindness. She was taken toward the office as well. She notes the smell of the place, misery and fear, though I suppose it was no more than the whiff of ancient squalor and an absence of drains.
She could also be smelling her own fear.
Oh, that's
and
true.
Misery.
They get to the office. Claire drops the present, which had been, we find out, peach brandy.
Well, but she drops it because she, on purpose.
Oh, yeah. And
to see, yeah.
Exactly. She draws attention to her klutziness. And this helps cover for Myrta's pulling the unconscious body of the officer, of the office guard behind the desk, just as they're approaching. She apologizes and goes inside and shuts the door. Myrta tells her that Sir Fletcher does not keep keys in the office, but that the guard had some. There was also no map. He did find out from the guard, though, that there were three condemned cells on the same floor in the middle of the west corridor. She says she must have the keys because if he's caught with the guard on the floor, they're both done for. But if she's caught, she can swoon, say she saw her groom murder the guard, etc., and fled, not knowing where she was going. He starts pulling some drawers out, making it appear as a theft or attempted theft. And when Claire says that, shouldn't something be taken if you're trying to make it look like a theft? Myrta's like, no, the price for theft is hanging, whereas attempted theft is just flogging or mutilation.
Like, if they find me with some of his possessions on me, I'm done for.
Yeah. So the plan is for Myrta to leave, her to count to 30, and then to follow. They'll meet in the small wood to the north. And if she's caught, don't forget to throw the keys away, he says. Mm-hmm. So Claire finally finds the West Wing, and that made me laugh, sorry, West Wing, and then does an eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and chooses the center of three doors. She gets the door open, walks over to the men, and asks one of them, James Fraser, a big redheaded man, is he in this cell? Where is he? And prisoners were making their way out of the cell since she so kindly let the door open. And someone answers her that Jamie was taken away that morning by a Captain Randall.
This is not going to end
this
well,
This is
y'all.
Not pretty.
This is not going to end well.
Foreboding.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. She knew that they must still be in the castle, but no one had left since the morning because they've been watching it, except for a small kitchen party to leave for supplies.
In there somewhere.
Had to be somewhere. She knew he had taken Jamie somewhere to torture him. She compares Randall to a cat. The man I had seen at Fort William was a cat by nature. He could no more resist the chance to play with this particular mouse than he could alter his height or the color of his eyes. And I find this interesting because Diana also compares Jamie to a cat. But in different ways, not in his torturingness.
Yeah, I know.
But in his, later on, we don't want to necessarily say what it is. But she does at one point.
Again, the description of the character is perfect. I mean,
yeah.
It just says, like, what kind of man he is. He's just so... Anyway, yeah.
And as she leaves the cell, she runs into a redcoat. She grabs her dagger and stabs him in... I put chin,
under the chin.
Yes,
up
thank
his
you.
Throat.
And I know, bar. Yeah. And then she gets out of Dodge. She had left her sock knife in the soldier's throat and now only had her dirk. So according to the light coming through the high slit of the window...
Sorry, the word dirk makes me laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Dirk.
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 She was on the west side, according to the light coming through the window. She reasons that if you want to torture someone, you want privacy and sound insulation. Then, out of sheer luck, she goes on a journey and happens to find the correct area, then the correct dungeon cell. I mean, yes,
She was looking a way to, like, she figured it had to be down.
Yes.
So she was looking for wherever stairs led down, you know, and it took her a while, and she had to stop and hide from, I think, somebody once, a guard. She, you know, stepped back and hid from him for a second, and it took her a little while.
And this is, like, almost maybe 7/8 or 6/8, well, I guess, which is 3/4, whatever, about 3/4 of a page that I'm putting into, like, 2 lines. So she didn't just go boom and find it. Yeah. She was going around for a while, but I'm like, we don't need
all of that. Yeah.
So she finds the correct dungeon. She was able to orient herself because of the narrow window that enabled her to see the courtyard outside, so she knows what side of the place she's on.
She knows the general area she is and the direction she's going. She sees the light under the door.
Exactly.
And that is how she figures out.
And this is interesting, too. I wonder if they'll do any kind of comparison shot. Like, we know they're going to do it at some point. But she remembers herself in the 20th century recoiling from these types of dungeonous caverns on doing, like, on tours and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or, as a tourist.
Yeah. It's like, to me, it'd be comparable. Like, I remember going to Alcatraz as a little kid and them locking you in the solitary. And I went in with my dad, and I was little. I was probably only like 8. And I went in there and I was holding his hand. And the solitary, you know, it's pitch black. Like, you can't see your hand in front of your face. And it's like this hole in a wall. And it's dark and it's creepy and it's small and just like the feel of it as you go in, it's so oppressive, and then it's pitch black, and it was, I could only handle a few seconds. I'm like, Dad, get me out of here. I can't take it. Get me out. I started crying. I was so upset. He's like, you're okay.
When I was in fourth grade, we went to Yosemite with my class, and they had one of the hikes that they took us on was to what was called Indian Caves.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you get into these are where the Indians would hide from the white men when they would come. So, but the way you get into these things is because there's literally like this very narrow tunnel in a cave.
I don't like caves.
And you have to go down feet first, down this tunnel. So you're going down feet first, and all you can see is like the top of the cave, like inches away from your face. And you're going down feet first, and then at the end,
I could not do that.
You have to go over like a boulder entrance, over this like big rock, and then it opens into this big open cavern.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so dark down there that when you turn off all the flashlights, it's pitch black. You can't see your hand in front of your face. And of course, they passed out wintergreen lifesavers.
So you can sparkle.
So all you can see is like green teeth around the
sparking in the dark. That's fun. No, I mean, being underground, it's so strange because you know you're underground. Mm-hmm. It's a different feeling. It's heavier. It's different. It's more oppressive feeling, I think.
It's very damp.
Anyway.
So Claire could tell that this part of the prison wasn't in operation currently, but that it was being used because of the torchlight, as Lene said, that she could see beneath the fourth door.
Sconces were lit along the wall.
Yes.
So she knew as soon as she got down there, she's like, I'm in the right spot.
Yes.
Because obviously there's nothing else going on down here, but the sconces are lit.
Right.
So somebody's using this for something. And then she started looking at the doors like to find which door had light underneath it.
And she opened the unlocked door and sees Jamie. She calls out to him twice and he looks up. She says that the room smelled of fear and vomit.
What does fear smell like?
Piss.
For real? That's what you're going with? Just piss? Just piss. Is that what you smell like when you're afraid?
I don't know. I've never smelled.
I'm just saying.
People tend to sweat a lot when they get afraid, so I'm sure it smells like a sweat, body odor. Yeah. Like, and I don't know. I've never smelled fear like that before either. But I mean, I've always thought fear is like an energy you can feel in the room. Like when somebody's afraid or an animal's afraid, I can always feel it more than like smell it.
Well, thanks to the movie Jerry Maguire, I do know that dogs and bees can smell fear.
There you go.
No, actually, it's dogs and beasts can smell fear. Dogs and beasts can smell fear.
Jamie was chained to the wall by the ankle. She doesn't understand why he is in such a state, because there's no blood and he appears healthy, but he is sweating and obviously is in pain and about to pass out. He raises his right hand to show her.
Ugh.
And is this where the two ends of the bone or someone's just bone?
She describes it.
Compound fracture. It's like, it's awful.
Well, she describes it as like a bloated bag of bones and tissue because it's so deformed.
Barely recognizable as a hand.
It's like hardly recognizable as a human hand, and there's bones, couple bones jutting out through the skin. It's just like, it's so disturbing the way she describes it. And I mean, if you've ever like cut your finger, I've cut my finger with a knife several times, mm-hmm. and like deep like, cuts or slice the tip of my finger off, like just the skin of the tip. And the pain of that will like bring you to your knees. It is so painful. And can you imagine? I mean, there are so many nerve endings in your fingertips.
Oh yeah, your hands.
Oh my gosh! And to have your hand completely crushed and like, it's just
dude,
it makes you sick.
I've had a hangnail that's brought me to my knees. I can't imagine having like bones sticking out.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that he was conscious.
No
like,
kidding.
Because I mean, the way she describes
he wasn't
just,
all the time.
No, I know.
He was in and out of it. She just happened to catch him at a lucid moment.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Jamie probably. Says that the hand is payment for the nose he broke with interest. Now,
you know,
when he comes in later, he looks fine, but did he injure Randall? Is this from earlier?
She doesn't really describe him as having a broken nose, but...
Or just attacking his nose in some way.
But he did say that he, like, choked him, like, almost with one hand.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, so we don't know like, if it's I didn't from realize this time,
but maybe she just figures it goes without saying because he's already said his nose is broken. So when he comes in, she doesn't
look for it,
bother to describe it or anything. So
did he break it the last time
that's what
they
I'm
were
asking.
All together? Is that when they escaped?
They've had a few skirmishes.
Or
oh,
William.
That's what I was
didn't
thinking.
He break his nose then?
When he comes in to rescue her,
yeah,
he does punch her and knock him out.
Yes,
so maybe that's what it was about.
Okay.
Because I would think Diana would have described something like that.
If it were happening
if it had
now,
happened
yeah.
just then.
Because, trust me.
Because the only thing
she
described
a dude like a ham with blue eyes. If
I know.
The guy's nose was
well,
actively
does,
broken,
and she does make
it.
The comment about when he does come in, the handprint. So,
ooh,
I mean,
yeah.
you would think that she would describe something like that. So it must have been that when he knocked him out
before.
To rescue Claire
yeah,
before
like,
he must have broken his nose.
Dude, so. Man can hold a grudge.
He's a
frankly,
sick
they
mother.
Both can.
I won't
they
even
both
say
can.
It.
Oh, the sickest line in this entire thing comes. It's
oh
crazy.
Yeah, it's sick.
Well, the sickest line ever is not in this chapter.
Yeah.
But the sickest line in this chapter is coming
yeah,
up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So she works on the lock to try and free the ankle chain, and Jamie tells her she only needs to find a key that will fit size wise.
Yeah.
Not
she's like sitting there forever, like
to try and fiddle with
minutes
it.
On end, like trying every key on the key ring, and finally he's like, "You're not going to find one that fits that." It's not on there, and that's when he says it just needs to be able to fit in the lock and be straight.
And then you can pound it
in, and it'll pop open.
And so she's trying to do this, and he's bracing himself.
I like the it. Yeah, when she's looking around for something to hit it with, and he's like, "The mallet is on. Get the mallet off the table." It's just like,
and she's like, "Is that?"
Yeah,
wait,
she's like, is
and
that
says,
what
I,
he... And
yeah.
he like, she couldn't even get it all the way out. And
no.
he's like, yeah, that's what he used.
Oy. So she starts to use it. He tells her, as Linnea just said, he tells her to use the mallet on the table. And he says that it was what Randall had used to damage his hand.
Burr.
So, hey, twin. But she accidentally hits Jamie's ankle with the mallet.
Oh my god.
He loses his balance, and when he goes to brace his fall, he reaches out with his right hand. Oh my god!
Oh god.
And that's
like,
when he passes out.
Yes.
Right, from the pain.
Probably
but,
from goodness.
However, had she not been interrupted, it was probably more helpful for him
for
to
him.
Pass out.
Yeah.
I agree.
Because then she's
it
not
was
worrying
for her about
whether or not.
The, arrange the lock,
yeah.
or the key, lock and the key.
To and she's not concerned about hurting him.
To back up only a tiny bit, boop, I did have it in here, I didn't
boop,
mention it.
Boop,
conveniently, Jamie had learned about
the
locksmithing
lock.
From a fellow prisoner the day before. Sometime, we think, in this prison stay.
Yeah.
But
it's
convenient. It's true, but considering how much time he's spent incarcerated at different times in his life,
who
knows?
That's
it could have been
which
at any point in time. It was still a good skill to have.
So Jamie's fallen, and not so fun.
And she's going to work on the lock.
Exactly. While he's fainted, while he's passed out, she goes back to work on the lock.
It was a mixed blessing, because it was helpful for her, because she could concentrate on what she was doing,
yeah.
but considering
halfway what through happened trying, next. She's pounding on this lock and she's like beginning to like curse Irish locksmiths, you know, because it was this Irish guy that had told Jamie that this would work. And then Randall walks through the door, opens the door, yep. and like stands there with this gaping expression on his face.
I don't know why he's surprised.
Well, that she is the last person he would expect to see her there. I mean, he was.
But the best part, his special friend Marley.
Oh, you know what though? Let's think about it though. Considering the last time he had Claire in his office, I'm sure Jamie was the last person he expected to see then too. Considering those circumstances, I would not think that she would be the last person he expected to see.
Yeah.
Given the circumstances.
Yeah, and her description of Marley, again, with the description of characters.
And his pustulant
teeth. He's like a dirty Hodor.
Yeah.
But, like, dirtier is mouth, like, the teeth are rotting out of his mouth, and he's drooling. And
he's obviously not very good looking, we just said that, but he's also not very smart, which I guess, Hodor.
Like I said, Hodor.
Yeah, Hodor. Okay.
Yeah. But so instead he'll say, Marley.
Yeah.
Marley.
Stop.
Randall tells Claire she had damaged Crown property and that was punishable by law, as was attempting to aid a prisoner to escape. He pulls her up and ties her hands behind her, and she stomps on his toe and he pushes her onto the bed, so she's kind of out of the way now. And he tells her that she's no coward and is a good match for Jamie, and that there is no higher compliment he could give her. He's not a fan, but he's saying, like,
seriously,
look,
if he had both of those people able-bodied in his room,
they'd tear him to pieces.
He wouldn't have a chance against both of them if they were both
even
able-bodied.
Jamie, one-handed, can do him.
No, I know, but what I'm stating is that Claire...
Oh, you mean by herself even.
Correct.
Can't hold
her own.
And then later on, I don't think I even took a note on this, but now Frank's hands are described in places as slim, slender hands. And I know Frank is not a huge, massive
hands
man.
Hands of a scholar.
Yes.
Is what she describes.
But in this chapter, and I didn't write it down, but you can find it. I think it's towards the end when he's lifting up Jamie, basically. She says it's surprising how much he can do with such a slender frame. So it makes me think... He's a slight man, tall maybe.
Yeah, he was such a slender frame. I definitely remember reading that. She's surprised at how strong he is because Jamie's not a small guy. He's a big guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Randall is able to lift him up and put him on this stool in the corner.
Oh, so yeah. Sam, by the way, he's a big guy. I couldn't pick him up.
After she's fallen on the bed, he has Marley search her for weapons, and she's like, oh, please kill me now, kill me now, kill me now. And of course, she loses her dirk because he finds it in a search. And she's really trying to avoid Marley's prodding hands. And Randall notices this, and he says Marley may entertain her in his own quarters and maybe share her later on. He's just trying to egg her on.
That's true, but then Claire's like, "What? You don't want to watch?" And he's like, "I might have some pretty dirty, you know, things that I like to watch,
but that is
even past what I'm interested in watching."
He said, that "It's interesting." He says, "You're quite a lovely woman, and I don't want to watch him do that to someone who's so. I mean, he wouldn't want to watch probably Marley with anybody, especially because he's his point.
And you know, like, and this is another point that I think I don't know if we've made it on the podcast at this point, but I know a lot of people in the past have complained to Diana about her portraying basically, you know, homosexuals in a bad light. But what she states is, he's not even a homosexual. He's a sadist.
Yeah. She even said in some recent news thing, she's quoted as saying he's a bisexual torturer or something like that. Sadist.
He's an equal opportunity sadist. Yeah, I mean, he'll torture
anybody. He doesn't care
anybody.
If it's a woman
that's
or a
what
man.
He needs.
He doesn't
what
care.
He needs to get off is someone else to be hurting.
Yeah.
So it just happens that he
they
has
need to be scared and possibly in pain.
Yes.
Yeah. He wants them to be scared, and he wants them maybe even in pain, and he wants to hurt them.
Yes.
And I think Jamie reminds him of someone, obviously, we'll find that out, but he reminds him of someone, which is why he's so fixated upon him. But even his fixation on Jamie isn't even about Jamie, we find out.
It's about something else. So he says he would still like to know who she is, meaning Claire. He says, you're a Jacobite, of course, but whose? Who do you work with? Who do you belong to? And he names off some names. He's like, Mariscals... or Marshalls, Seaforths, oh, likely Lovett's. And so that we...
Because he's with
Jamie. The Frasers, yes. Yeah. And he says that he's even heard she may be a witch. Something about Krensmuir, And I thought to myself, gee, how information travels. This is Kreinsmer coming out of Randall's lips.
I like the way he's described. As he says it, he kind of has this look about him like he's kind of skeptical and yet suspicious at the same time when he says it, kind of like watching her carefully, like, to see if she's going to do anything witchy. Like, it's...
Well, because even as scholarly as he is, because he's obviously from a better family, you know what I mean?
They're all very superstitious back then.
They're all still so superstitious. They're like, you know, this is something that is alive and well in the Scottish Highlands and in Europe in general.
Yeah.
So, didn't matter, like...
It didn't matter, like, where you were born or how much money you had either. People were really suspicious.
But even at this time, during the Age of Enlightenment, yes, I will say that... The further in the Highlands you go, or the I don't want to say lower class, but the lower educated, we're definitely more superstitious.
Well, the less access you have to quality education. I think that could even be said today, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, because education takes the mystery out of things.
Right? Exactly.
Because the science of things is explained, and then there's not the mystery there surrounding it.
And that comes in later books when they discover germs.
Yeah.
When she tries to explain them as, like, wee beasties or whatever she explains them as, she, you know, to us, we understand that germs are bacteria and living things
and
that are...
And not to say which book or when or how or what happens, but that comes back to bite Claire in the booty.
For sure.
For sure. Okay. For sure. Enough of going on for the other books. Okay.
But my point is like, so many, like, modern-day things that we come to understand through science are explained away through superstitious natures and witchcraft.
Because they didn't have an explanation.
That's what
it was.
Exactly.
So they created explanations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Randall says that he may bargain with her. He says, tell me who you are, convince me, and I'll give you to Sir Fletcher instead of Marley. I'm like, it is better.
He's totally lying, but at the same time, you're just like, what is she going to give him? She has nothing to give him. Yeah. She's like, well, that's a great offer, and I'd love to take you up on it, but I literally have nothing to tell you.
Well, and not only that, she's like, and I know you're lying. You couldn't take me to Sir Fletcher because what if I told him about everything that's going on down here in the dungeons? I'm pretty sure he wouldn't approve.
Because even if something happened to her,
then he
countered
that. He countered that. He's like... Who's he going to believe? He's going to believe you?
Yeah, no, that's true.
You over me, who I found wandering around in a prison where you didn't belong?
Yeah. With a fake name.
Exactly.
And,
And
no, that's true.
He has Jamie roused by Marley, and Marley throws water on him. And he is not prepared for his sudden lunge. Jamie kind of comes to, and then...
Well, Jamie kind of fakes him out. He, like, he comes to, but he acts like he's still not quite there. Mm-hmm. And as he turns away is when Jamie lunges at him.
And Jamie's arms were around Randall's neck, and he punches him in the kidneys. And then he, or in a kidney, probably not both.
No.
Then he...
not with one hand, no.
That's what I'm saying. Boop, boop. Or boop, boop. Yeah, not going to work. Then he danced around...
This is not a video podcast.
I know. Thank goodness.
I'm like, what you just did will not be appreciated by anyone.
Will not be seen. Then he danced around... I wrote dance, but he basically kind of danced around... with Marley a bit.
Trying to hit each other.
Marley had the mallet and Jamie had a stool. Then he, like, smashes against the wall to make a smaller mallet of his own, a smaller club. And Marley gets a good shot into Jamie that Jamie has to take the full force of in order to get Marley close enough to hurt.
Dude.
And dude takes it into the ribs.
Like...
By the mallet. By this huge guy.
It's true, but I mean... You have to think he's obviously somebody who's been trained in that kind of hand-to-hand warfare, because who would think of that? They're like, okay, I'm going to fight you. Because if some giant man is, like, coming at me with his fist, I'm going to try to get away from it, not lean into it so that I can... I mean, that's warfare. I'm not
But it's
kind
of like I told you with the horse stepping on your foot. Your instinct is to pull away, but you should lean in and push them
away. And ladies and gentlemen, don't worry. Lene may help us horse around, but she also has a lot of doggy knowledge, which will come into the end of the chapter.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you've all read. If you're listening,
if you're listening, you're read. So, Marley gets in. Oh, I already said this. Marley gets in a good shot, but then Jamie hits him with his club over the head.
Jamie sacrifices a couple of his ribs for that. By the way,
it's hard to read this whole chapter.
So,
we're so connected to these characters. You hate to see them hurt, and I mean, I feel that way about this whole series, like from book to book to book to book to book.
I'm already thinking about Brothers Noah and Ashes I want to talk about right now Claire and her whole thing.
I know, but every time, and I'm sure Diana feels the same way when she does this to her characters.
Diana? We love you, but you do it to them.
But every time she does it at least once or twice.
Oh, yes, she does. She's the one who said at the event, I can't wait to see what they do to you when you're, tortured and raped.
So, well, you put there. That's how you find out who the character is.
And I agree.
Yeah. No, I never thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. But I know you have to do that to find out what these characters are made of. But it must be so difficult to do that to the people that you love. And I mean, she has to love these characters half as much as we do.
Yeah,
to have created them and live in their world and to have fleshed it out to such a degree that we as readers live it with her. Mm-hmm. That I can't imagine that she enjoys. Like, on a sadist level, doing this to them. She can't really enjoy it.
I don't know. Hold on. Remember,
she's also... One of the things she is known for saying is, people know that I'm Claire and Jamie and all these people, but don't forget, I'm also Randall.
I know that.
So she's... They're all a part of her. They're all in her. So surprising everyone, Randall is up and has grabbed Claire. Jamie cannot attempt to hurt him without Randall hurting Claire.
And I can't believe nobody paid attention to him.
I know. This part of the book, I have to say, really pissed me off. Because I'm like, and all the movies you watch and stuff,
the girl always stands helplessly by
while her man is fighting off the bad guy. And like, the woman never thinks to grab a blunt object.
Her hands are tied.
Oh, yeah. Well, she could...
But she could yell.
She could have gone and kicked him, or I don't know, something.
Okay, I know this is totally off subject, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't know if you guys watch the show, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, the series finale a couple weeks ago, they had this character that they...
Series finale or season finale?
Season finale.
Sorry, oh, I was like, what, finale. Girl?
They had one of the big baddies that they supposedly had offed, mm-hmm. and then at the end, he kind of comes back, and they're like, you know what we always say, cut off the head, and then they have somebody come in and, like, shoot him in the face, and it was this really kind of comic moment. But it's so true. I'm like, you got to make sure the people are dead before you discount them like that.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that nobody paid attention.
I know. This, like I said, the scene just frustrates me because the one thing Claire could have been doing, yes, she was trying to stay out of the way and she was distracted by Marley and Jamie fighting, but for God's sakes, make sure Randall stays down on the ground. Kick him in the head if you're after him.
Sit on him. Think about it. Jamie's got one, like, mangled hand. He's got one good one. Broken ribs. All he can handle is one dude.
And you got two in the room.
In the room. The least you can do is make sure to watch his back.
That's what I mean.
So Jamie puts his weapon down and sits down and says, let her go. Randall asks why he should. And Jamie says that one-on-one, he'd be no match for him, even injured as he is. And the orderly is out for the count and also of no help for now. Randall asks if he has a suggestion for what he might do. And Jamie says, I have. You want me. Let the woman go and you can have me. Do what you wish to me.
Did we point out that Claire's at knife point right now?
Yes.
Did we point that out?
I don't know if we did. Well, we said he got up. Well, I don't think we pointed out that he got up with a knife and put it to Claire's throat.
Okay, surprising everyone, Randall's up and has grabbed Claire. Okay. Jamie can't attempt to hurt him without Randall hurting her. So Jamie puts down his weapon, sits down.
Initially, he even says, make your choice. He's like, because if you kill her now, I'll kill you. You know, so
they're all going to go.
So I say you let her go. Mm-hmm. And then we can see where this goes.
Yeah.
So Jamie's like, yes, I have something to offer you. You want me, let the woman go, and you can have me. Do what you wish to me. I'll not struggle, though I'll allow you to bind me if you think it needful.
Martyrs. And protect me from martyrs.
And I'll not speak of it come tomorrow. But first, you'll see the woman safe from the prison. Claire sees the blood, and this gave me the chilly, yucky, nasties. Claire sees the blood oozing onto the table and sees that Jamie is deliberately keeping himself from fainting. He's using the only pawn he has, himself. And if he faints, he can be of no help to Claire.
He's purposefully pushing on his hand or something.
Yeah. Oh, no, Lordy.
She sees like him taking the bone that's come through his hand and digging it into the table. Oh, it's awful. To keep himself from passing out. He's using the pain to keep himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what Randall needed, because while his other injuries may have been able to be explained away, Randall's other plans would not. I mean, they can be hidden as long as Jamie's quiet, because they're not going to go looking for certain things. Mm-hmm. But if Jamie complained the next morning...
And even if he were hanged...
They would do an investigation of his body.
But how would they have been able to claim, to prove that it was...
If they found Randall's spunk
in
him?
Right. But they don't have DNA testing then. No, he was just in a giant room full of condoms.
I'm sorry, but that smells...
Anyone. Yeah. They don't have the technology we do today.
But that, along with all the stuff on his body...
Let's just put... The bottom line is it doesn't matter what Jamie says... Randall wants him.
Yeah.
Period. So he's, no matter what Jamie puts up.
But he's still trying to say stuff. It doesn't matter.
He is, but no matter what Jamie puts up, Randall's going to do what he can to try to get what
but
he wants.
Yeah.
Diana writes, if Jamie accused him, even if.
Oh my God, I'm having such deja vu right now, and I don't know why.
Say that again?
I'm having such deja vu.
Thank you. Don't, on my face. There would be at least likely an investigation. If
at
Jamie
least.
Accused
or he,
him,
and he could
I mean,
start.
That's
exactly.
Hopeful thinking. That's just wishful thinking at that point. Yeah. I don't think
so
that
Claire,
there's really a case to be made.
Claire here, I wrote this word down because I thought it was so, I'd never heard of it, and I looked it up, and it's pronounced Susurrus. So,
Susurrus of sheathed metal.
Yeah, and it means like a whisper, murmuring, or rustling. So you can hear that metal going, coming in or out of a sheath,
yeah.
The little sheath. Whatever. Yeah. No, that's like paper. But anyway, she Randall asks...
How do you pronounce that again?
Susurrus.
So it's like... Susurrus.
It's very onomatopoeic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Randall asks if Jamie will allow a test of his sincerity. And Jamie says yes, thinking, yeah, I know. Or lordy.
No.
I'm so totally grimacing right now.
We are
that's
all grimacing.
What she's talking
We're
about.
All grimacing. He goes to Jamie and takes... And he's like so... Matter of fact, and slow about it. He's not even
Talk
fast.
About being a cat. He's
I
totally
know.
Toying with him
He
the
has
whole
no
time.
Reason to rush this. He's
I
enjoying
know.
It.
I know, but it's not about rushing
his
the whole thing.
Element.
It's about... Hold on. Oh, he goes to Jamie, takes a nail. There's conveniently a bucket of nails there. And he positions... This is what got me. He positions it carefully. So he's taking his time. Diana writes, he's positioning it carefully, and he hammers it into his hand and into the table... With four blows. So it's not even like one strong blow. It's four. So it makes me think he's like so
And he
careful.
Does it like through the hand, right?
Yeah.
Through his already damaged hand.
His already damaged hand.
I mean, it's not like he did it through the webbing or like anywhere else where it
I
would
think
be, like,
he was trying
either.
To get it between the bone. He did not that. I mean,
well, he didn't want
him.
It to be able to pull free easily.
No. Yeah. He wants it in the meat, I think.
He pounds it four times. He hammers it really hard.
He wants to make sure that when he comes back, he finds him where he left him. Let's be honest. That's
yeah.
the bottom line.
Yeah. Well, hold on. This is the worst line of the whole chapter. I'm sorry. Okay. So he hammers it into his hand on the table, the four blows, and then he looks at Jamie and he says, now kiss me. But he's sorry. And that was like actually the wrong tone. He's actually... My guess is, like, a little bit tender. And then when he comes up from the kiss, he's looking very dreamy.
Because you know what he's like? He's like, I'm going to nail your hand into this like I just gave you some freaking flowers.
This is the most disturbing part of the entire chapter. When he said and he does this, it says, that, now kiss me.
Well, it's like you knew that he wanted
he's
to bother
He's such a sadist.
Oh, no,
he's so sick. He's so twisted. It just makes you sick.
Well, here's the thing. It always makes me think of Pretty Woman. Where the prostitutes are like, no, never kiss a man. Never kiss any of your Johns because, you know, then your feelings get involved in it. It becomes emotional. So for this, it was like it went from being a sadistic act to, like, I want to make you feel something. And it just, it kind of took it to a whole other level for me.
Yeah.
And she...
Like, just bugger him and be done with it. Just stop toying with him.
And when Randall comes up, as I said, from the kiss, his face is dreamy. And Claire recognizes the smile on his face. It's Frank's. It's the same smile as Frank's.
Oh.
And now it sickens her. It's gone from, like, looking like Frank, but not looking like Frank, and, like, you know, the whole weird thing inside, the shift she has every time, this whole conflict. Now it sickens her. And this is the first time we've heard that.
Mm-hmm. That the thought of him.
Exactly.
Makes her
exactly.
sick.
Exactly. So Randall cuts her ties, and Jamie asks that he be able to say his goodbye. He says it doesn't matter what's to happen, he tells Claire. It doesn't matter what's to happen between now and the hanging, but she says it does to her. And he says, yes, that's why you'll go, so someone is still thinking of me.
Aww.
And this, I'm sorry, this is a little bit funny, you have to admit. As Randall's leading Claire out of the room, he says to Jamie, in a tone that is like someone taking reluctant leave of his lover, I'll be back very shortly. And she feels sick. And Jamie says... I'll expect you find me here.
Yeah. Because
I'm nailed to the table.
That's awful, but it's funny. Even as he is freaking nailed to a table, he's still making jokes. Yeah. This dude. So on the way out, Claire says to Randall that she is a witch, and she tells him his future.
I love this part.
I love it, too. And that he will marry, his wife will bear a child, but that he will not live to see it. And she gives him the date of his death. We don't hear the actual date.
No.
Because, but he does.
He does.
And he pushes her out of the door. He finds the door and pushes her out right at this time.
Which is kind of odd. I find there's like this back door to the dungeons of the...
Oh, and then his Jamie's back door?
No.
What the heck?
You took that... over the line.
I didn't know where you were going.
Oh, no.
Like,
wow.
I'll cut that out.
But I mean, they explain why there's a door there, but like to have this door like in the back of the dungeons.
But it's a door that like is obviously raised above the ground, so you have to fall out of the door.
Yeah, you have to fall
out. There's a way to get back into that door.
And it is explained, it's to throw out like refuse and things like that that are
in bodies.
Dead bodies.
All the hanging victims.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way, it's just...
She falls out into the snow. It's surprising her that it's so bright, and of course because of the snow and the reflected light. And she's in a ditch, as you said, and she sees dead people.
Yeah.
Sorry. So she has...
Well, she does.
I know. This is kind of getting through a little bit of that kind of quickly. Mm-hmm. And she knows she has to find Murcia and Rupert, and she follows the ditch along the prison wall to guide her. And after a bit, she hears something, and she turns to see a large gray wolf. And I'm like, at this point, the first time I read this, I was like,
Are you kidding me,
Diana? What the heck?
After everything she's just been
through. Let her escape.
After everything she's just been through, you gotta throw a freaking wolf.
I'm like, you're about to have her husband raped. He's nailed to a table. He's about to be nailed for real.
And you're having
and
her hunted by
her, like, outside. Fighting wolves barehanded.
We have a large gray wolf, and it's like, what's coming up, right?
But she did say it was a sickly wolf.
Kind of. Not emaciated.
It was large, but it was not
healthy. It was not really well. She remembers...
She noticed it limping, didn't she?
Yes.
I mean, she notices it's limping.
Now, Diana does this, and I understand, and it's really, really well done, but just like when Jamie was about to tell her how to do the locks, and he tells her of this Irish locksmith, right?
Yeah.
So now she's about to deal with this wolf, and she tells us about this Yank she met in this Yank
Pembroke Hospital.
Charlie Marshall.
Yeah. Marshall, yeah. And he was a sergeant in the canine corps, and he had told her what she should do if she's ever attacked by a dog. And he says, speak firmly and loudly. And she did. So she spoke to it. She says, bad dog. In fact, you're a perfectly horrible dog. This is so English of Claire.
I know. You nasty, nasty thing.
Exactly.
You're so wretched looking.
You offend me with your mere presence.
You're so ugly.
And eat more, but not me.
She takes her cloak off and wraps it around her right arm as padding. She's preparing?
Preparing.
Preparation H?
She's, ew. Hemorrhoid?
What?
Stop again! You can't keep going back to that, don't you?
You mentioned
obsession.
Anyway.
Something's coming out of your back door.
Please warn me first.
Right? She takes off her cloak, wraps it around her right arm as padding. She's preparing. She puts on her leather gloves, and another thing that she remembers being told
by
Charlie.
His voice in
how is she kept... track of her leather gloves if they're not on her hands.
They're in the pocket of her cloak.
Yeah. Okay, I'm like...
So he told her, they're going to go for the throat, keep looking them in the eye, and you'll see when the dog makes up his mind to jump. So, not so much.
Yeah.
She says she's watching him, and then all of a sudden he's on her or at her.
Yeah.
And she doesn't see it. So tell us about, before we go on and finish this chapter, in your experience, you know, not that you've been attacked a million times, but what are some kind of things... Do you concur with Charlie Marshall?
Yeah, you never turn away from a dog. If, like, let's say a dog... I've had this happen where I've been out running and walking dogs and things like that. And of course I get like accosted by random stray dogs. That's my pet peeve, is people who don't keep control of their dogs and keep them on a leash. Anyway, so I'm out walking dogs. The one thing you don't want to do is turn away from a dog. Even if you have no other dogs with you, because generally if a dog's approaching you and snarling and snapping, they're probably going to go for your dog, not you. But if you're out by yourself and a dog, which I've had happen to me, actually, I've had experience with this. And I was running, and the dog came after me, and the one mistake I made is I did what Claire did. I was yelling at it. I was like telling it, yeah, go home, get out of here, you know, yelling as loud as I could. And that dog was still barking, barking, barking. And I saw this guy come from around the corner of his house. And so I thought, oh, well, the owner's here. And I turned away. Mm-hmm. And that's when the dog bit me mm-hmm. on the back of the leg. And it didn't break the skin or anything, but it did bruise me. But that's when they will strike.
When you turn away.
When you turn away. You never, ever turn away from a dog that's snarling or being aggressive. You always stare it down. You always yell at it. Whatever you can do.
Throw things at it.
Whatever you've got at hand, you never, ever turn away. Because that's when they'll strike.
They're looking for signs of weakness, and that's a sign
and
of weakness.
Wolves in general, wolves are different than dogs in many different ways. We've bred out so many instincts of mm-hmm. the wolf out of the dog, and that's why they're such good companions. But wolves hunt in packs.
Yeah.
And they hunt in packs, and the ones, they come from behind. They always send pack members. Oh. They circle from behind to attack from behind. So there could be some that are kind of out in front, circling to kind of corner an animal, and then they attack from behind, almost always from behind.
Hmm.
Because that's the weak point.
Yeah.
Because if they can
like
take
Randall.
The... Yeah. Well, stop.
Always from behind.
No, but that, I mean, everything she says here is totally true. I mean, you keep looking at the dog, and you look it in the eye, and you yell, and you throw anything you've got, and I mean,
and she
that's all you can do. Do not turn away from a dog that's charging you. Because if you turn and run,
it's an instinct.
That's an instinct,
yeah.
And they can't
turn.
It's
think about
it turns
though,
on their prey drive,
it
their
does.
Predatory drive,
but,
to chase.
But up until you turn, it's a dominance issue, and you're
it is.
You're kind of proving who's the dominant one, and the minute you turn away, you've given
you've,
that
you've
to
submitted.
Them.
If you turn away, you submit, and they will attack. And that's for dogs and wolves, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just totally true, everything she has in this.
So she never, even though she was told she would, she never actually saw it, quote-unquote, make the decision.
Yeah.
It just left.
But wolves are different, man.
They are.
I mean, they have a different look about them and their eyes and everything. I mean, they're just, they're hunters. That's
they're
what
just
they do.
Godless creatures.
No, I mean, they're beautiful animals, but yeah. I've known a few, like, hybrid wolves and things like that. Yeah. And I don't trust them because all they really want, they're very close-knit with their pack. But when new people come, they can get really aggressive and defensive. Mm. And that makes me nervous. And if you're nervous, they're going to sense it. And they know that you're weak.
Oh, yeah.
Nervousness is weakness to a dog or a wolf. So,
which is the opposite of Lene, because if you had ever met Lene, you would know that she pretty much owns any animal she comes in contact with. She like walks in, she's like, shit! And then, I don't care if she's never met this animal before, that dog or cat will sit.
Well, the cat may run away.
I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure her husband is pretty equally trained, but
oh wow,
he's pretty
good
well
grief.
Trained.
So the dog jumps.
Well, and she does the right thing because she has this wrapped around her arm.
Yes.
And as it leaps, she moves it up to her neck. And so it latches onto her arm mm-hmm. instead of her neck. And so at least she's got the padding protecting mm-hmm. her arm. So.
And exactly. And that was what she had
planned.
That's
what she had planned. I mean, you watch the attack dogs and the police dogs being trained. And that's what they're trained to do. They're trained to go for arms and mm-hmm. clothing. That's mm-hmm. what they're trained to do.
And she, as Lene said, she gets it up. The dog attacks her, jumps at her, and
you
gets
keep saying
on
dog.
Her arm.
It is not
it's
a dog.
Wolf. The wolf.
This is a wolf.
Yes, the wolf attacks her, and she's able to get it in front of her, her arm up, and it's biting her arm, padded arm, and she...
Doesn't she fall on it? She falls on it on purpose to try
yes.
to...
She does a few things with it. This was quite a
it's
nice,
a long,
long
struggle.
Passage.
It's a long struggle.
But, exactly. But she eventually gets, she lies on top of the dog. I think
she knees it in the belly a couple
yes.
times, I think. And
yes.
I recall her saying she feels the back hind legs
scratching
her
yes.
belly and trying to get the
yes.
grip on her.
Yes. And it's tearing her dress.
And she keeps kind of trying to scoot the two of them towards the edge.
Exactly.
Of
At one point, she is on top of it. It's underneath her. And she goes, as Lene said, inch by inch, she's trying to get to that corner of the prison, the corner of the wall. And once she gets there, it still takes time. It's not that quick. But she eventually gets both hands, because she needs all the leverage.
Mm-hmm.
She eventually gets both hands around its head. And part of her hands are even inside of his mouth. And she takes both hands and dashes its head against the corner. And
she pushes far back and keeps pushing and pushing and pushing until the dog... Not the dog. She keeps pushing around the corner against the corner of the building until the wolf's neck snaps.
But she said that it wasn't like an audible thing. It was
she just felt it.
She felt the release of the body.
Yes.
All the tension left the body, and she knew she had killed it finally.
Yes.
Yeah, and then, of course, the next thing that happens, I'm just like, really? More? More has to be happening?
I know. And then she's like, she saved herself from the dog, from the wolf. And then she says, and I thought this was kind of funny, she's so exhausted, she sleeps for a bit, she says, she thinks.
She's not sure. She's not sure. She's so exhausted. She thinks she may have drifted off.
I've had days, and it's not really from exhaustion, but just like...
Or wolves.
No, for none of those reasons. But just like... Where I'm, like, driving someplace I always drive. And then all of a sudden I'm like...
That's self-hypnosis.
I know, but I'm like, I know I got here the normal way, but I don't remember.
You don't remember stopping at the stoplights. Right. You don't remember stopping at the stop signs. You're like, did I just drive? Like,
yep.
Was I asleep? Was I awake? No, I know. I've done that before.
So she's just got out of that. She maybe fell asleep for a few minutes.
And she knows they travel in packs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she did. And it's like, this knowledge is just coming to her.
So she tells herself, I gotta get up. I gotta get up. Yeah. I gotta go. Gotta go.
And she knew she couldn't, there's no way, Dana said, not a chance in 1,000 that she would be able to kill another one.
She'd be like, I may as well just lay down.
I honestly think the only reason she was able to kill that one is because it was already kind of ill. And like, it was weak. Not well.
Yeah, a large full grown wolf, I don't think there's any way she could have.
Especially
a healthy
since they're
one.
Normally in packs, yeah.
I don't think she could take one on. I don't know if anybody could take one on, but.
So she's moving, she leaves the ditch and is moving, I think, out into this forest area where she's supposed to
meet
them.
She's trying to head towards the, to the north of the woods, right, where she's supposed to be heading.
And she does begin to see a number of wolves, and she does what she was doing before. She starts yelling at them, making herself bigger, and throwing things at them.
She picks up stuff and starts throwing what she can find.
And then all of a sudden, one
goes
down.
That's the area, though, that I'm like, another part of the book, I'm just like... Are you kidding me? She finally, like, we've just gotten through the struggle. She kills the freaking wolf, and now there's more of them? Like, what else can we throw at this poor woman? That's how I felt reading this.
Absolutely. Like, and then one kind of falls with a whimper, I think?
Yeah, well,
they
start, and one starts winding its way towards her, and she hears it yelp, and it kind of...
And
the other wolves startle... Yeah. And kind of start falling back, and she's like, "What?" And then she notices that the wolf is lying there dead with an arrow in it.
And then another arrow comes down.
She said, "The second arrow passed within a foot of me, and I caught a tiny blur of motion before it thudded home into the chest of the second wolf."
Yeah.
And then someone grabs her elbow, and she sees that it's a stranger, but she knows it's a Scot because of what he's wearing. And she says, "Help!" And then falls into his arms.
Which I imagine it's more like, "Help!"
Exactly.
She's like, "Ah!"
Yeah.
And then she falls. Yeah.
And then
it's the most. I have to say, it's one of the most exhausting chapters of any book I have ever read. Because
it's there's nothing good comes from this chapter. No. Literally nothing, nothing at all. It's like it's the chapter that sets up just a heartbreak. Now, granted, some better stuff comes, but it's like this whole chapter. You're just like, they're gonna kill my man. She's gonna get eaten by a wolf. Now a wolf pack. Now there's new people. Are they friendly?
Yeah.
Are
just
they really going
to? Doesn't mean
are they
going to
help her?
Right.
No.
Just because they don't like wolves doesn't mean they want to help her.
Yeah.
So I mean,
although they did protect her from the wolf.
Protect her.
So they want to at least find out who she is.
Yeah.
Right, so. But good
and
gracious.
That
is the end.
Is the end of chapter 35, and it could not come soon enough for these poor characters.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my lord.
Next week. Join us back. We'll be touching on chapter 36, which is entitled McCranick, who is...
I love him.
Now, he's
the next chapter is a little more uplifting. Yeah. Even though it's still intense, there's
still a lot of horrible things that happen in it and things you find out about. But
there's a little comedy relief in it.
Yeah. For sure.
Where in this chapter, didn't get much comedy relief at all.
But, like, McGranick is one of my favorite characters in this book. Like,
I can't wait to see who they cast.
He's literally only in, like, two chapters.
He's one of my favorite.
And I think if they do the prequel, he's coming back. We'll find out more about that. But please read along and join us back next week for chapter 36.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
And thanks, Lene.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us
at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young